The Tour de France ended its 10th stage earlier today. That covered 110 miles in the French Alps, the first big mountain stage of the great race. America's Lance Armstrong, who's on a quest to win his 7th consecutive Tour de France, took second place, at the end of today's stage, and first place overall, he recaptured it. Dan Coyle is the author of Lance Armstrong's War, One Man's Battle Against Fate, Fame, Love, Death, Scandal, and a few other rivals on the road to the Tour de France. He joins us from our bureau in New York. Nice to talk to you, Dan.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
As we mentioned, Lance Armstrong regained the yellow jersey, the overall leader today. How did the 10th stage of the race play out?
Well, 9 months ago, when the Tour's mysterious high priests chose the route, everybody pointed right to this one. Mountaintop finish in the Alps, the first true test. Because they knew, and everybody knows, Lance Armstrong has got a template for winning the Tour de France. And that the first element of that is to dominate that stage, to try to win that stage and prove that he's the strongest. Mm-hmm. And when you are the strongest, you need to show it. And that's what he showed today.
And his he was nipped at the wire for winning the stage itself, but left most of his most important rivals back in the dust.
In the dust, a minute in cycling is worth about a touchdown in football, and by that reckoning, his closest rivals are, 21, 28 points back.
Now, there had been considerable speculation over the past few days that Lance Armstrong and his team, the Discovery team, had been, well, playing possum. They gave up the lead, they say almost voluntarily, a couple of days ago.
Well, they looked awful, frankly, in a stage last Saturday. There were 32 riders that finished a difficult stage, and Armstrong was the only member of the Discovery Channel in that 32 group. So you had a situation where it looked like the leader was going to be unprotected, was not going to have those teammates to pace him and to rely and to save his energy. The Tour de France is about saving the bank account of energy, and without a team there, he would be wasting his energy. But they seemed to turn it around. And it's interesting to think about what must have happened at that Discovery Channel dinner that night.
Well, there is a lot of people to talk about. David Zabriskie, an American who held the yellow jersey for 3 days, has now bowed out of the race. What happened to him?
He succumbed to the most common cause of bowing out, which is a hard crash. He crashed hard in the team time trial, stage 4. Bruised himself up pretty badly, and when you crash, it's like dropping a Ferrari engine on the floor. It's just not going to perform like it used to.
And again, there is no sport, I guess, these days that we don't talk about without drug scandals. One competitor expelled from the race today for after a blood test. What happened there?
He exceeded what's called the 50% hematocrit level, which says that 50% of your blood volume, no more than 50%, can contain oxygen carrying hematocrit. So it's a way of maintaining the octane, if you will, of the riders. And all the riders do have centrifuges where they can test their own hematocrit. This guy apparently exceeded the number, and he's out.
Mm-hmm. So with Lance Armstrong now, this is the first mountain stage, but there's the rest of the Alps to go through. And of course, there are other mountain stages in the Pyrenees. How important is the lead that Lance Armstrong established today?
Really, really important. The physical race is one thing. The psychological race is another. And Armstrong this is the big blow psychologically. He has proven that he is the strongest. And now they're going to be watching him to see if he slips up, to see if he has a crash. He doesn't have an Achilles heel. Armstrong has got an Achilles hip. His hip has given him trouble over the years. And to the extent that just before the 2003 tour, he was unable to walk up a flight of stairs. Hmm. If he falls hard on that hip, if he shows any evidence, they'll be on him. If he's still strong, he'll try to get them to compete for lesser prizes to see who wants to be on the podium with him.
Yeah. And at this point, would you say it's still early in the race, relatively, but is it Lance Armstrong's race to lose?
Psychologically, it's not early in the race. He has shown that he's the strongest, and this race is a very Darwinian race. It's a bunch of the world's strongest animals out there seeing who the strongest is, and he showed that today.
Dan Coyle, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Dan Coyle is the author of Lance Armstrong's War, One Man's Battle Against Fate, Fame, Love, Death, Scandal, and a few other rivals on the road to the Tour de France. He joined us from our bureau in New York. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. While the media covers what's known as the toughest race in the world, very few of us have actually tried it. That is, except for one reporter whose editor asked him, well, how hard is this? Peter Ford is chief European correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor. He recently did a mini version of the Tour de France, and he joins us now by phone from his vacation home in Burgundy in France. Very nice to have you back on the program.
Nice to be here.
You didn't try the whole race, obviously. That's quite a chore. What did you actually do?
Well, I didn't even try a whole stage. I did the first two mountains of the first mountain stage of the Tour de France. I mean, it was a total of about 16 miles. It was nothing. It was a blip on the Tour de France screen, but it was quite enough for me.
So pretty tough.
What's extraordinary is that you have no idea when you watch them on television of just how fast they're going. You know, I mean, it's one thing to climb up a mountain for half an hour or however long it takes you. But what I realized was that I was going downhill not a great deal faster than sometimes they go uphill when they're attacking. And the pain I felt in my thighs was just unbearable. The speed they go at and the physical fitness that they display is quite staggering.
I assume you were using a pretty good bicycle, what, in 30-second gear or something?
Well, I thought so, yes. I had 21 gears, and I thought I was in the easiest all the way up. I found when I got back to the bike shop that I may have made a mistake, and I may actually have been riding in a more difficult gear than I should have done. But actually, it doesn't make much difference, you know, whether you ride easy or hard gear. It's still you're still not going very fast when you're not a Tour de France rider.
Are you a hardcore cyclist? Is this something you're used to doing?
Not the slightest. No, I generally have an old granny bike with a pannier on the front that I go down to the bakery in the morning to get the bread. I'm not a biker. I used to run a bit, but I mean, frankly, however hard you run, however fit you are for other sports, it's not the same as cycling. I mean, to do this is, every year it's 21 marathons basically back to back, and after just my little exploit, the next day I was so tired I fell asleep halfway through the afternoon. These guys, they have a quick massage, they go to bed, and they're doing it again and again and again.
Mm-hmm. Food is absolutely critical. I mean, they talk about the huge volumes of stuff they eat, and you know, very carefully controlled in terms of their protein and carbohydrate. I assume that you were exacting in picking out exactly what it was you were going to eat before attempting this.
Absolutely. I limited myself to only half a bottle of wine and the other things that I generally enjoy in France. But I was given a choice at the bike shop where I rented my bike of all sorts of little tubes of gels, high sugar, high energy gels that you tear the top off with your teeth and suck them in. One called anti-rust, which you're meant to use at the last minute. It didn't seem to do me much good.
Were there crowds cheering you on this route? And we could keep seeing those pictures as well.
No, unfortunately, they were not given advance notice of my passage. But actually, I was quite grateful because at one stage on the second hill I took, which was a relatively easy climb, some of the hairpin bends, they come up on you surprisingly. And I had a lot of difficulty with the gears. And I changed down when I meant to change up and came to a dead stop and tipped over. And I ended up in the road somewhat entangled with my bicycle and not looking very dignified, but thank heavens the fans had not shown up by that stage.
Well, were you wearing those neat, tight bicycle pants?
This, frankly, when my editor first suggested I do this, I thought, you've got to be out of your mind. I mean, wearing spandex, let alone the idea of shaving my legs. But no, I was wearing lime green and bright yellow spandex, which is another good reason for nobody to want to watch me.
Now, you're talking about the agony of going up, and believe me, I'm there for you, but is it terrifying to go down those slopes?
Well, I've never been as fast as that. I mean, you know, naked and open to the elements. I was going at about 30 miles an hour before I decided to put the brakes on because I didn't dare go any faster. And 30 miles an hour when you're going downhill, or 30 miles an hour full stop, is extraordinarily fast. And I was going that fast, as I say, downhill freewheeling. At the same time as I was doing my couple of hills, the Tour de France was doing a team time trial on relatively flat ground. They were averaging, over about 60 minutes of racing, they were averaging 35 miles an hour. And I was too frightened at 30 miles an hour to want to go any faster.
Peter Ford, we'll expect to see you out there on a Team Lance next year.
The yellow jersey is my goal.
Peter Ford, Chief European Correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor. He joined us by phone from his vacation home in Burgundy, France. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.